the computer in front of me. It's 6:30, so I declare the general council meeting open. And
All
all right, thank you. If there are any further questions from the gallery, could they please be directed to one of our staff members, and then they can alert whoever needs to be alerted. We begin by acknowledging the Kaurna people, the traditional custodians of this land. We pay our respects to their elders, past and present. I welcome members of the public to the meeting. I'll let everyone know that the audio of the general council meeting is recorded and will be made available on the City of Marion website. Usually that takes a few days as we confirm the minutes and so on. I ask elected members if they foresee any potential conflict of interest with an item on the agenda. There being none, I'll ask if someone would like to move confirmation of the minutes of the council meeting held on 26 February. Moved, Councillor Taylor, seconded, Councillor Masika. All those in favour? Carried unanimously, thank you. So we're going straight down to corporate reports for decision. Now, the business growth and engagement plan, I can see, probably will entail a reasonable amount of discussion. So what I was going to suggest, and probably more discussion than anything else, so what I was going to suggest is moving it down to become the down to after the finance report, so we can get through a lot of the other business relatively quickly. If no one has any objection, then I've got leave of meeting to do that, and that means that we get straight on to the second budget review. I'll invite any questions or for someone to move that that be accepted. Moved that we accept the review. Thanks, Councillor Masika. Seconded, Councillor Telfer. Question?
I'm really keen to get a sense of the overall budget. I've read the second review, but I'm really keen to get a sense of our whole financial overview, so that as we come into discussions next week, we are in a better position to know what the overview is and what is available for us.
Well, I'd like to invite Mr. Barnwell, our Chief Finance Officer, to come forward. But perhaps, Councillor Telfer, while he's coming forward, you could be a bit more explicit what information you might want on the spot, or to be given at a subsequent meeting to help you with your inquiry.
Well, I understand in the second budget review, we're dealing with a couple of extra items that are very, very expensive and they change the game. However, we are fairly balanced as I understand it, at the end of the second review. My concern is the sense of what is the whole structure and what is available for us to decide on, because at some point we have to start making value judgments about what fits in and what doesn't fit in.
I suspect it's more for some detailed budget deliberations, but Mr. Harrison or Mr. Barnwell, can you help? Thanks.
Thank you, through the chair, and thank you for the question. If I can just start off by setting the scene to some extent, certainly before my time, over the last two, going back more years, there was always a sense that when there was new initiatives, pressures put on the budget, that each of the quarter reviews would find uncommitted money within the budget that could be reallocated for a new purpose. And that's been really on the premises that Marion for a number of years has had good levels of reserves that it could call upon in its annual budget process, as well as for new initiatives, new projects. As everybody is now aware, we've certainly utilised reserves cash. We certainly have all of our previous reserves committed to existing projects. And since I've been the City of Marion, we've also introduced the Executive Budget Committee process, which is a month-by-month process of heightened levels of governance, which between the executive leadership group, myself, Ange Allison and Ray in particular, on a very regular basis, sometimes weekly, we go through line by line of aspects of the budget to see how it's tracking actuals against budget, department by department, division by division, unit by unit. And we're always looking to see where there is opportunity to what I would call harvest some unspent monies or monies that could be available for redirection, or where we have pressure points, such as a utilities contract, where we know there's going to be an extra $300,000 for a six-month period of time, for example, that we need to find funding. So there is some movement that occurs through the Executive Budget Committee process with high levels of governance and high levels of transparency and accountability, and the relationship with the first, the second, and the third quarterly reviews that Council goes through as a result of a legislative process. I can say now, absolutely it is the case that we have far more granular transparency across all aspects of the budget being some nearly $100 million per year or thereabouts. And we do it on a weekly and a monthly basis. And it is the case now that efficiencies that were within the budget, we've identified probably over $1 million of those in the last 12 to 15 months. And they're getting less and more difficult to find within the budget as we're getting far more lower levels in the budget with detail. So quarterly reviews in the sense of moving money around is not the case that it once used to be. We just haven't got that application or that ability to do it so much. We have got a commitment, and I've demonstrated that commitment on a number of projects, that for ring fence projects which have a ring fence budget, if there is pressure to deliver the project within the budget, we have an absolute responsibility to come back to council and provide a background on the situation and identify whether there are shortfalls in the budget to deliver on the project. And we've certainly been doing that in more recent times as well. The global budget is under pressure, but I can say, and hopefully it's clearly identified within the second budget review, is that at the moment we're largely on track and operating within our budgets, which for the first 6 months up to the end of December, is a very good position to be in based on the financial pressures, the inflationary pressures that we're coping with at the moment, and importantly, to remain very competitive from a labour market perspective, I'm having to look at what we're paying for labour across the board, not only contract positions, but in relation to attracting, retaining people for particular projects, but to actually fill positions at the moment. So we have got significant labour cost pressures against our budget, nearly 400 FTE positions, as well as about a 20 million or thereabouts contractor budget to buy labour in at the same time as well. So there's multiple pressures, multiple aspects we're taking into consideration, but I'm confident that we will come in within budget this year. I'd like to hope under budget to a small extent. And it will be key to the successes over the next couple of years of keeping average rate rises down to a lower number than maybe some other councils are considering currently at the moment, which was played out somewhat in the media today, that we go through detail by detail of all of the different aspects of the budget to make sure that we can present to council a fully informed position as to where we come the 30th of June this year, but most importantly, where we think the budget is going to be positioning itself for the 23-24 year and onwards as well. I'm not sure whether the CFO would like to add anything.
Well, perhaps I could just check in, Councillor Telfer. Are you happy for the moment to leave that till detailed budget discussions, or would you like further information?
I have two concerns. One is in our, I guess it's our cash statement. I can't just see up the top. where we've got the 425,000 confidential, surely you could put something in there like major project or something in brackets so that at least there's not this nebulous amount that has no indicative direction of where it is going from or to.
I could just add to that, the when the matters came before council, there would have been a public headline at least of the nature of the project. So it seems a fair point to include at least that headline, even if the details are confidential.
Sure, I take that point and accept what you noticed there. We should have, firstly, we should have referenced the actual council report, so obviously council can actually then jump into the report and see exactly what it's about. And even saying additional funding required for soccer and BMX would not have, you know, it would have put people on the path as to where exactly that funding is allocated. So I accept that point. And probably just add to Tony's position. Look, at the end of the day, we all know that council has historically had those cash reserves. We know council has been very diligent in applying those reserves to reduce rate rises over the past number of years, with our going down to our 0.1% and up to 2%. We are in a really challenging environment, and whilst we have budget review 2 here, which forecasts a net surplus position at 25k, which is almost in line with what our original budget was, 23k. We have been fortunate, but one benefit of actually interest rate rises is that we've been fortunate to capture some of that additional investment income with our cash just on deposit, and which did offset some of the additional costs and bringing these council resolutions into play as well. So look, it is a challenging position. We also have a fairly quantifiable amount of expenditure to come in the back half of the year for capital projects. Within this the first half up to January, we spent about 9 million out of the 35. So there's going to be a heavy spend in the back half of the year. And obviously that may play out as to make cost pressures again as we work through that. But we are week by week talking to people. We're trying to find out what's going on and making adjustments, looking for areas where we can actually improve efficiencies to try and keep this budget within council's adopted budget. And again, we're going to move into, which the paper's on the 21st, the forum is going to move into that position for next year. We're talking at the 4 and 4.7% models. There is going to be obviously implications around going forward because our cash position, it has come back to a very balanced level. We are going to, with future projects, there's a considerable amount of new projects coming on the next couple of years with, Cove, basketball, Marina Hall, there's a lot of projects coming on. There's probably 5 or 6 major significant projects coming on which council is going to undertake over the next 2 years, and that will require some borrowings to actually fund those projects over the longer term. So in the papers that we bring at the forum and discussion at the forum is really around where do we go from here, because we are in a different environment. We're at CPI levels of 8.6% is the second quarterly CPI. And council at this point in time is forecasting a much lower rate rise, well below that, which is probably at odds with some of the councils out there in the reports. So I think we're in a relatively fortunate position where we have the capacity to borrow for future projects as well. But having said that, we really need to keep a tight grip on our costs as we're going through this year as well, in particular. And next year is going to be quite challenging as well. The Reserve Bank is still forecasting that longer-term inflationary pressure, and we're going to feel that. We have adjusted in the forecast budget coming. We've adjusted our cost indexation up slightly as well because we know it's going to take longer to come back to normalised levels. It's not going to be till mid-25, 26, if their estimates are even right. So it's a matter of, getting a balanced position, which is fair on the community and also enables councils to work at some of their strategic projects going forward.
It's been moved and seconded. If there's nothing further, I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. That's carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we go on to page 48. It's been a long time in the making, this one, marketing and engagement strategy. Would anyone like to move a motion, Councillor Crossland?
Can I split this, please? Can I move 1, 2, 4, and 5? Hopefully they're non-contentious. Number 3, I'm personally not sure about. I think that might need a bit of debate, or maybe I'm not. I might be an outlier on my opinion on number 3.
So that motion is certainly in order. And perhaps what I would suggest is after we've dealt with the rest of it, the only thing is if we're going to, or just ask staff, is the tagline embedded in the strategy? No. So we can deal with it separately. Let's deal with that motion. As you say, probably uncontentious. And then if anyone wants to, we can suspend standing orders to have a brief discussion about it. And if it looks like heading into a lengthy discussion, we'll kick it down the track to some other meeting. So did you want to speak anything further?
No, thank you. I think the report's quite detailed.
Is it seconded? Councillor Valescu, thank you. No other speakers, then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. Yes, carried unanimously. Now, if you want to discuss it now, we can discuss it now by probably moving a suspension of standing orders, I suspect. Councillor Valescu, you're moving to suspend standing orders. That's seconded, Councillor Crossland. All those in favour, carried unanimously. So it's up for grabs. Perhaps, Councillor Crossland, if you want to kick off, I will just add an introduction that the staff engaged a consultant. The consultant came up with a tagline. It was tested with elected members and didn't find favour. There were two taglines, then one generated by staff, another that came up from informal discussions, which was tested with our focus group, Marion 100, and they had a clear preference for the one that appears, that is, out of the two, they had a preference for the one that appears in the report. So I just wanted to set that background, but feel free to offer your opinion.
Yeah, look, I'm of the opinion that we don't really need the tagline. Most people don't seem to even know what most companies' taglines even are. That's just my personal opinion. I don't see it adding value. I don't see think we need the need to start adding it to all our stationery, etc. And as for the a great place to live, work and play, it sort of just reminds me of the Mars advert, which is work, rest and play. But anyway, I don't suppose that's a bad thing, being linked to a Mars bar. Yeah, thank you.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were talking about the planet. We're much better than the planet, I think, in livability anyway. Other opinions? Anyone want to venture an opinion since we're being informal? Councillor Valescu?
Yeah, look, I guess that's probably the best tagline out of all of them. So I can see the benefit of attaching some of that to things that are being done as far as some of the services that we offer. And I guess for me, I would see it more as an informative and instructive tagline as opposed to just purely self-promotion. So it's really about, you know, letting people know, because I guess some of the things that prompted this was the fact that people don't know what's available, you know, what services we have in the city of Marion. So that's why I would support it. Now that we're at where we're at and we've had it tested by members of the community, I'm comfortable to proceed.
So we've had a couple of opinions about the way forward. There's one that's in the report. There's having no tagline at all. Other views, Councillor Hoffman?
Can I just confirm how long, where will there be a review process with this tagline? So how long will we have this tagline in play?
Good question. It's not explicit in the report, but normally these things would be reviewed from time to time. Anything from management?
Through the chair. The marketing strategy runs to 2026. So the tagline would be used until that point in time, and then we would review it as part of the overall review of the whole marketing and branding strategy. A tagline does take some time for the community to recognise it, so it's not something you'd be able to review in 1 year's time. We could put a midpoint review if we needed to, but generally you'd review it at the conclusion of the current marketing plan.
That's exactly what I thought. Okay, through to 2026. Okay, thank you.
So again, I'm thinking as chair of options that we have to test. I've heard of two different options at the moment. Any other options, Councillor Telfer?
I'm not putting up a different option. I'm just making clear that in the discussions I heard that it might be a great place to live 1 week and then a great place to work the next week and great place to play the next week. So not the three of them together all the time.
Well, clarification, I can say from my discussions with staff that the intention was that each of the three variations would be applied contextually. So if we were having an event at Tonsley, we might have a banner that says a great place to work. If we were doing something down at Hallett Cove foreshore, it might say a great place to play and so forth. So I think it was a matter of all at the same time, all in the same time period, but not at the same event. It would depend on the context. That's the intention, I think. Right. So, Councillor Naismith.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a quick question. Is this mostly digital, or is there a budgetary amount that's going to be allocated towards the physical signs that we've seen on the actual assets? And I'm sorry if I missed that in the report.
Ms. Allison, a budget and format for the tagline?
Yeah, we're currently doing an audit of all our signage as part of our normal review of marketing collateral. And so the budget for that activity of redoing signs, physical signs, is part of our annual budget anyway. So it's not an additional cost because we're reviewing all the signage anyway.
So it's a renewal of existing signage. Yep.
Yep, that's right.
Yep. Okay.
So it means that if at the Marion Leisure and Fitness Centre we might have City of Marion, the tagline might be underneath or not underneath, as the case may be. But that's obviously not really an extra cost if we're doing a sign anyway. Councillor Crossland? Yep.
So just a question. So on our business cards, it's not going to have a tagline. On our website, it's not going to have a tagline. It's just on signage. So on a sports club, we might put a great place to play. On our admin building, I don't know, a great place to live. Maybe work, maybe play, maybe, I'm not sure.
Ms. Allison?
Through the chair, it's for promotional purposes. So if we're doing a particular campaign of some sort digitally, we'd use the tagline. On the website, if we're promoting an event, we may use the tagline on that page for that event. So it really is going to be, again, contextualised in terms of what are we trying to promote, and is the tagline an additional asset we can utilise for that promotion?
Councillor Loskin.
Thank you, Mahana. I think it's pretty commonplace for companies these days to have a tagline or a vision statement, and you know, that you think of the most common ones that you know of, and it comes to your head automatically, you know, just do it and I'm loving it, or whatever the case may be. You can just, you know, think different. It's Apple. And I think it is really, it sets the tone of the business. I think it is an important, it may seem trivial and it may seem silly, and it probably in some ways is, but it actually does work really well in terms of setting the mood for a particular business and the direction. So I'm happy, personally, I'm happy with this particular tagline, and I think I don't think all the three words should be used together. I think I like the idea of them being, you know, used in context, but I think it's a good tagline personally. Thank you.
Councillor Masika, and then I'll try and bring things to a conclusion. Thank you, Councillor.
Thanks, Your Worship. I look up the words, they're very fantastic, they're really good, eye-catching, and it's a common practice for all businesses around the world. They have a tagline which can direct the people specifically to a specific thing, to a specific area. So I put myself in the shoes that I'm coming out of the plane, and this tag I see it at the airport. it will make me come to Marion to see why it's a very good place to live, to play or to work. But if you put Marion City, probably I won't bother. I'll just continue. But this one is a very good eye catch and I support the tag.
Right. Well, I think from what I've heard, it would probably be appropriate to test the motion as printed with that particular tagline. However, if people either don't like that tagline or think there should be none at all, then they can vote no. So I'm resuming standing orders, inviting someone to move a motion so we can make progress. Either way, Councillor Luscombe moved as printed, which is the clause number 3 there. Seconded, I think, was Councillor Hoffman. Thank you. Any further speaking to it? There is the option to, well, had a mover and seconder, speak against if anyone wishes. But otherwise, I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, carried by majority. So we'll try that out as a tagline. I still lament the fact that we didn't go with full of surprises. I just think that would have been such a fun tagline. But anyway, democracy prevails. We move on to page 131, Code of Practice, Access to Meetings and Documents. Fairly standard stuff, people. Councillor Telfer moved.
If so.
Seconded Councillor Pryor. Any further discussion? And all those in favour, raise your hand. Carried unanimously. Thank you. Now, in relation to the next one, procedures at meetings, I noticed that there is one variation. This is another one where I'm going to suggest, if anyone wants to, move to suspend standing orders, just so we can clarify views on the number of questions people can ask and possibly any other clarification people want. Otherwise, we can just test it with a motion. Up to you, Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, I'm happy to suspend standing orders on this one. Just a couple of questions, perhaps.
Then is that seconded? Councillor Hoffman, all those in favour? It's carried unanimously. So the main question mark here is whether members should, as a matter of course, have 2 or 3 questions on an item. Everyone knows what it means. I think we can just go to an informal show of hands, and whichever one prevails, we can test that in the motion. Can still be subject to an amendment if anyone wants to test it further. So just who's in favour of the 3 questions? Show of hands. Who's in favour of the 2 questions? Okay, more likely 3. So I would accept a motion that contains the 3 question option, if I can put it that way. But let's take this opportunity. Are there any other views people want to put forward about amendments? Time for questions. Then if not, is there another, just saying, Ms. McKenzie, anything else that ought to be clarified, or we can go straight into a motion? Well, I'm after a motion. Oh, sorry, a question, Councillor Luscombe.
Yeah, just to clarify, earlier you mentioned, Mayor Hannah, that it was 3 questions per motion, per item. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Thank you.
That is correct. And you'll see that, there is a little bit of an out clause. The chair is always lenient in exceptional cases, but it is really there to make sure that we don't get bogged down in questions that could have been asked prior to the meeting. And I commend this particular group of councillors for following that practice quite well so far in this council term. So moving a motion, a question, Councillor Crossland.
Yeah, sorry, just to pick up on Councillor Luscombe, in the actual copy I'm reading, it does say maximum of 2 questions. So that's just going to be changed. And I'm happy to move then as printed.
Thank you. If there's no further contribution, then is that seconded? Councillor Masika, any opposition?
Just as a point of order, did we resume standing orders in there?
I did, yes. The it doesn't need a resolution to resume. I just say so and it magically happens. So we're right into it, moved and seconded. If there's nothing further, apart from totally ruling out the point of order, then I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by majority. In fact, it was 5-10-1. And we record that because it needs a majority of 9 councillors. So thanks for that one, everyone. So let's go on to page 169. The title of the report is Portrait of the Queen, but of course we're really talking about replacement with Portrait of the King, King Charles III. We do need a motion for this because the Queen's portrait is established there by council resolution. So, Councillor Telfer?
I'd like to move that the photo of the current monarch within the City of Marion Chamber, in the case of change in monarch, the photo will be changed for on advice from Government House. But I also would like to go on and move that we display the Australian flag and the Aboriginal flag in the Council Chamber. The flags will be displayed in accordance with the Department of Premier and Cabinet flag protocol. And I'm happy to speak after.
Thank you. I'll just ask Ms. McKenzie for a clarification, and particularly for the members of the public who are present in the gallery, but can we just clarify the flags that we have here, South Australia and Australia?
Correct.
So should that motion include the reference to the 3 flags?
Through the chair, so the Department of Premier and Cabinet flag protocol says that you must fly the Australian flag, and then after that it's discretionary what you can fly as number 2. However, if you are going to fly more than 2 flags, you have to fly the Australian flag, then the South Australian flag, and then the Aboriginal flag. That's the order in which the protocol states.
Right, easier on a flagpole than hung up on a wall behind me, isn't it? But Councillor Telfer, you mentioned 2 flags in your motion.
Yes.
So you're doing away with the South Australian flag. Is that right? I just want to check.
Yes.
Very good. Please speak to the motion.
I think it's a very important time and a chance as we put up King Charles's portrait as the monarch to also look again at our flags. I am very pro-South Australian, but there are other places where the South Australian flag can be seen. I think this is the year for us to put up the Aboriginal flag to show that we really are committed to the words that we say each week, that we acknowledge Kaurna from 65,000 years ago up till now, and that we just acknowledge in the background that we care about that enduring history.
Is that seconded? Councillor Luscombe.
Thank you, Mayor Hannah and Deputy Mayor Telfer. Yes, I'd like to second the motion. I think it's important that we recognise that we are on Aboriginal land, and I think it's a really nice symbol, an act of reconciliation, which of course we're working towards as a council. I must say when I first entered the chambers, I was a bit surprised that there was an Aboriginal flag. And so I think it just makes sense in this day and age to put one up, but I think it's a really good opportunity to do that, however we go about it today. Thank you.
Anyone speaking against? Councillor Valescu?
Question. If there were to be the two flags under the portrait of the monarch, being the Australian national flag and the Aboriginal flag, would it still be possible to put the South Australian flag towards the other side of the Aboriginal artwork?
Councillor Bilescu, if you wanted to see the South Australian flag as well, you could move an amendment to the motion and then you could leave it to staff to apply the protocol and find a spot for it, but it's up to you.
I just wanted to find out how that protocol would apply if staff were, you know, whether they staff can provide any advice. So that was really my question before moving in.
Ms. McKenzie, you've got something on that?
So through the chair, my understanding of the protocol is that you must fly to the left of the Australian flag, which would be, so from the gallery looking forward, it would be your left, not our left. What would become confusing is, so you have discretion over whether you fly the Aboriginal or the South Australian flag. However, if you are flying three, my understanding is they must go left to right and you must fly the South Australian second and then the Aboriginal if you're flying three. However, you have the discretion if you're flying two of what is that second flag.
Councillor Bilescu, the call is with you at the moment. Do you have anything further to add?
No, it just gets too confusing. I'll leave it at that.
Councillor Crossland?
Yeah, just so we're trying to be fair and equitable, so what about the Torres Strait Islander flag? What if we were to fly that as well? What order would that be in?
The protocol might be after the Aboriginal flag.
So we think it's after the Aboriginal flag. So it would go, so if the flagpoles, we use the flagpoles out the front, it's the Australian, South Australian, Aboriginal, then Torres Strait Islanders.
All right, at the moment, take that as a question. So at the moment, the question before the chair is whether there is anyone speaking against, or is there another question? Councillor Pryor?
Yeah, I have another question. The question is, can anyone tell me exactly what the flags are up there at the moment from around the horseshoe?
It's not a general knowledge test, and in fact, I did begin by clarifying that we have the Australian and South Australian flags. I wouldn't say flying, but draping, at least. I think that's the verb. So is the question I'll ask for a final time, is there anyone speaking against? If not, then I'll put the motion. All those in favour, raise your hand. And I need clear hands, by the way, people. All those against? Sorry, I'm going to take the vote again. I just remind all councillors that everybody must vote.
Mayor, I am confused what we're actually voting for exactly, if you could clarify.
Yes, I'll take that as a point of order. Always happy to clarify. So the motion is in two parts, essentially, that the portrait of the late Queen be replaced with His Majesty King Charles III, and that the South Australian flag be replaced with the Aboriginal flag. That might not be the exact wording, but that's the gist of it. Now, have I got a point of order here, Councillor Crossland?
Yeah, I don't believe that the way it's written, it actually says we're removing the South Australia flag. The words I'm looking at here don't make that clear.
No, there's no point of order. I've clarified it during debate. The motion is for two flags to be established, and I asked whether that meant only two, and that is what it means. So it has that effect, and that's what I was saying. That is the gist of the motion. I'll now take the vote again. I remind all councillors that they do have to vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against, raise your hand. Carried by majority. Thank you. And while I don't want to detract anything that was said about the flag issue, it does serve to highlight that we do have an expensive and highly informative Ghana artwork displayed in the council chamber, with an accompanying diagram which explains the various moving parts of the paintings. So while there may not have been an Aboriginal flag, we did commission that some years ago. But that, I'm only saying that for information. We move on. The next three reports, which are to do with KPIs, work health and safety, and finance, could be moved en bloc, which would still allow you to ask questions and comment on any of the three reports. But I'll leave it up to you, councillors. Councillor Pryor.
Certainly, I'd love to move those en bloc. Thank you.
Do you wish to say anything about any of them?
In very brief terms, the work health and safety one has improved, is kind of the best way I can put that. It was a little bit alarming at the start of the end of last year. So I commend the council and the staff for improving that situation.
Is that seconded, Councillor Telfer?
I've got in the KPI report, I've got a question about staff engagement. Can that be interpreted for us, that staff engagement measure, and where is that going? I look for the page.
Mr. Harrison or Ms. Vinyl? Yeah, Harrison's going to take that. What, page 173? Thank you.
Through the chair, thank you. People would be aware that we've been operating TeamGauge, which is a rather blunt point-in-time instrument. It's at times can take up to 20 seconds for staff to provide a rating against about 8 key dimensions and also provide some commentary. As an executive, we go through the commentary provided on a month-by-month basis as a senior executive group, and we respond accordingly to commentary that comes from the staff across the organisation. This was a point in time during the Christmas holiday period. There's a lot of absences during that period of time, and we hit the 69% versus the target of the 75%, so we weren't too far off. But as I've said to some elected members in recent times, I'm starting to question, I guess, the longevity of using this instrument. Organisations, and I understand some elected members might even work in organisations that use TeamGauge currently, it is the case that we ask our staff every month to respond. I'd suggest that people can tire of anything you ask them to do over and over and over again every month. But it has been an effective tool, TeamGauge, for us to have an understanding about what people are very supportive and happy with in the organisation, and at times constructive criticism people provide back to us can often be a single word, sometimes a sentence in relation to that commentary. But in relation to failing to meet the percentage on this occasion, I'd say largely it comes down to the timing was over Christmas, a lot of holiday absence, and I would expect that the next quarterly review will have an increase from that 69% rating. But I do reiterate again that I'm certainly one that's considering, I guess, the robustness of continuing to use this tool long-term into the future. The previous council were advised that we made some amendments on the methodology in which we were using the tool. We'll continue to monitor it and we'll use it if it's effective, providing that point in time, spontaneous response from parts of the organisation.
Anything further in relation to the question, Councillor Telfer? Yes.
401.78 adopted budget FTEs and 390 total staff. I'm just interested in that in terms of how greater amount that is in terms of an effect on this year's budget, because I guess I'm looking at the budget coming up. What percentage are we going to be spending on staff during the next year? So that's the bent of my question about number of staff, is the budgetary effects in the future.
That's right, the chair. Thank you, Councillor. The 401.78 on page 176, that's the budget for salaries and wages, including the backfill by temporary staff, and we do incur a cost of around about $3 million per year coming out of salaries and wages for backfilling when we do have absences. So that's the budget for 401.78. We're actually, what this is saying is, as of the end of December, the last day in December, that we're actually operating with 390.2 staff. So if anything, we are running under our substantive number, but there will be a cost incurred in some cases between the 390 and the 401 in relation to some temporary backfills if it is approved to do so. If I can just please take a moment in relation to page 177, which provides a longitudinal set of figures relating to staff. Pleasingly, in very tight fiscal period, the 22-23 percentage movement on prior year, if you look at about five lines down, is running at 0.75 compared to previous year. Now, that's at a point in time as of the end of December as well, but it's very pleasing that what we are doing is we're holding the cost of labour down to probably the lowest increase level for some 4 years, when it was minus 1.9 in the 19-20 year. Can also say that if you look at the third line down from 19-20, 358 through to the 390, as of the 30th of December, the 390, I've just had a very brief breakdown provided to me late this afternoon. And I can say that between 20 and 21 up to the current time, council endorsed positions, so council approved budget for an additional 21 FTE positions across a range of positions in the organisation, from hard waste to arborist, water tank drivers, Mitchell Park Sports and Community. And in particular, council has approved 9.6 positions in the last 2 years, 2.5 years, for the implementation and commissioning of the digital transformation project, which many of those are time-limited positions, and many of those will start to be considered for concluding as of 30th of June this year, as well as the 30th of June next year. There's also, within some of those numbers there, as I know members are interested in how we've gone from 358 to 390, that also in the last 2.5 years, grant-funded positions, no impact to the organisation, but grant-funded, has accounted for 8.55 positions as well. So if you look at those two different criteria, there's some 30 plus positions that are either council endorsed for funding and or have been funded through external revenue from grant funding at the same time. It certainly is my intention always to ensure that we work within the budget allocation of labour cost. And I can say pleasingly, we are doing that currently at the moment, despite the fact that we have got an impost of cost on a number of positions in the organisation at the moment as well.
And if I could add, that gap of 390 full-time people against a complement of about 402 is probably not an unusual gap to have at any one time. And you can note that 16 are under recruitment. So that more or less adds up, given that you're dealing with full-time equivalent figures. Just checking, Councillor Telfer, did you have any more? So you've moved and seconded. Councillor Crossland.
Thank you. My question's been answered. It was really about all those staff, but would it be possible to have what you've read out in an email so we can see that nearly all those positions are increases to services which have been endorsed by council, but also the ones that are time limited, so we know that there's a cut-off period for those wages. Thank you.
Very good. Any other questions? Then I'll put those three motions. All those in favour, raise your hand. Carried unanimously. Thank you. So now we're going back to page 22, the Business Growth and Engagement Plan. Now, members and management know that I have... Sorry, it's not page... Is it page 22? That's right. Yeah. Councillors and management know that I have serious concerns about the motion that's been drafted for us, but could I first ask councillors if you would like to discuss the content of the various programs, then you may want to suspend standing orders to have a more informal discussion, ask questions, etc., because there's quite a bit of detail there that's been prepared by Mr. Adams. But it's up to you, otherwise we can proceed. Councillor Telfer.
Interested in suspending standing orders so that we can look at the different foci that are listed there, but also, for me, maybe clarify the motion in terms of it being not necessarily an endorsement, but a movement towards a commendation, towards budgetary consideration.
Very well, you're moving suspension of standing orders. Seconded, Councillor Crossland. All those in favour, raise your hand. Yes, that's carried unanimously. So would you like to fire away with questions or comments, Councillor Telfer?
Sorry. I guess my concern is that when we come to a budget, we have to consider next week other items against this, so we can't actually endorse this tonight as such. For a start, we already have a couple of permanent staff, so we wouldn't be working in the CEO's domain on staff, but I would prefer us to be able to bring forward to the budget or commend towards consideration in the budget what is here, but I would like more detail on the different five aspects and some, not just ticking them off, but some ownership of those five different ones, particularly as Edwardstown finished, the grants finished, the Tonsley projects finished. Do we go on with what is finished by the grant? So I think there's some really worthwhile discussion we can have. The other thing that I have raised is that I'm a bit concerned about the ticking off everything in the nature area, because some businesses are fine on the theme of nature and others are counter nature.
So if I can perhaps ask Councillor Telfer, are you after a briefing for sort of the rationale of each particular area in the plan?
And even a response from councillors on where that sits in their value systems?
Yes. Well, do we want to go back to the probably page 27 is where you start with what is called each different focus. Focus one, small business engagement. Does Mr. Adams want to address the councillors on that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I've come in recently and been reviewing the existing strategies that City of Marion has and some of the services that have been on offer for a while, and also City Marion's standing economic development policy that has in place that sits secondary to, or sits outside of this as well. Working with small businesses, we've got a number of services that we've set up over time. The Southern Business Mentor Program is a long-standing service that has been running in conjunction with three other councils. This offers mentoring sessions for local businesses so they can upskill if they're having issues in a particular area. Sometimes you'll have people who are a tradesperson who maybe doesn't know about setting up a website, but there'll be someone who can guide them through that process, social media marketing, long-term strategy, finance, grant writing, tourism for people who are in tourism, sustainability for people who are wanting to move their business into that kind of area. This is a service that many councils run and we run it on their behalf. They pay us to run this service. So the staff sits within my team, but we are actually receive money to run this as well as make our own contribution. It's a really well-used service. Us and Onkaparinga are probably the ones who use it the most out of the participating councils. So we have that. Secondary to that, we have the Business Hub, which runs at Cove, which is well used by people in the Cove area. But as everyone sort of seems to know with City of Marion, the Hill is a bit of a divide in terms of where the usage comes from, that people around there seem to use it, but not necessarily other parts. So we're starting to look to see if we have other centres that we can increase their activation. We have latent assets that we could make a similar service available using the equipment and the things that we already, the processes that we've already set up. Second to that, there's two business associations that run in City of Marion. There's Southern Business Connections, which started off as being mainly around Edwardstown and has grown to be sort of the larger southern area. And there's also one that spun out from that, which is the Hallett Cove Business Association. Both have been supported by council over time. I'm suggesting that we continue to engage with them and look to see what we can do. I would like to see maybe a bit more motivated marketing from their behalf to try and engage new businesses rather than sort of keeping the same businesses either coming or also looking outside of our area. I'd like to see a more engaged group of businesses in our area using these services. Similarly, we run workshops a bit like the mentoring program where we're looking to upskill our businesses as well. Those generally run out of Cove. We're looking to see if we can move them into other areas as well. Tomorrow, we've got a great one running out of Mitchell Park. If anyone wants to upskill around how to use LinkedIn, tomorrow morning, I think there might be some seats available. And also the way that I also want us to review how we communicate to businesses, because one of the things that seems to happen in councils in this area is you get the people who really love to engage with councils and the work they do, and actually reaching out to new people is challenging and something that I think that we need to do a better job of, making sure that we've got new people coming in to use our services, and that requires some work on our behalf, having looked at our existing systems.
I do have a follow-up question. Mr. Adams, you're just saying that for at least the Southern Business Mentoring Program that we get money in, and yet when I look on page 31, we have a table of ongoing budget, there's no set off contribution figure under 2023, 2024 and ongoing. So is there any real risk of that not continuing?
Without staff and a budget allocation towards it, then we wouldn't be able to run that service. We review it every year and we're coming up to that time that we would make our commitment to the other businesses that we can offer this service.
My question was, I thought you said there was money coming in.
There is.
We did it on behalf of someone else. That why isn't that money coming in shown as a...
That's a net figure, I believe.
That's a net figure, you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay, I didn't pick that up from the table. Councillor Crossland?
A couple of things. The first one, if we move the motion as printed, we've sort of locked in that ongoing expenditure forever. And I just wondered if there was scope to make it a sort of a 3-year locked in. That's number one question. The second question would be, we've done all these things and I visit Hallett Cove Business Association regularly and see how that's grown. But what we don't get as a council for close to $1 million worth of investment, an indication of any results, adding tangible results. So we've spent millions of dollars on supporting local businesses, but we have no case studies of what it achieved or how it's helped a business. And I haven't had anyone come back to me to say how valuable our service has been. And again, in this report, there's no information to support what we're actually achieving.
Through the chair, and I agree. Having come into this is we have anecdotal stories, and we've got some measures around how people have used them, and that have gone up in a previous paper. One of the things that I've been talking to the team is to make sure that we can get those stories and increase the visibility to you.
So, one of the when this first came up earlier this year, I'd asked for some suggested KPIs to be included in the report. I'm glad to see an effort has been made in that regard. But before bringing this report, which is asking for $750,000 a year, was there not some service review done, some sort of evaluation of past efforts?
There absolutely was. And I think probably the timing with the changeover in the elections maybe didn't come up, but this is one of the things that the first things that I did was looked at some of the usage. And I believe in the report, there's some figures around, you know, where people are coming from using them, the numbers that some of the services that we have. One of the gaps that I don't think we've maybe done as well as I would like us to have done is some of the people who use our services to follow up with them to actually show those tangible results. Great, you had a service 6 months ago. How's that strategy going? We had some International Women's Day event last week. We got a great anecdotal story from one of the businesses who have spun out in Marion, and they are looking to, they make native foods. They're looking to add a cellar door experience to that. So for tourists who are coming to Australia, they'll be able to come and see, you know, these are native ingredients and this is how you can use them and then purchase that. They've worked out that's an opportunity using the Southern Business Mentoring Program. They're now working with our tourist advisor. They're now using the grant advisor because there's some great tourism grants available, and they're looking to add this as a service. So actually being able to show you, yes, we provided this meeting, refunded it. It's resulted in this kind of grant income is the type of thing we haven't recorded very well and has been missing from the work that when I've come in and reviewed it, and I'd like to be able to share that with you going forward. So that's within my own team. This is one of the goals that I'm looking to for my team to improve.
So Crossland.
So the follow-up from picking up from what you've said is there any benefit instead of locking this in as an ongoing program with no tangible results connected to it, to do it as something like a 2 or a 3 year program with a review and a report of the results achieved? Would a 2 year period be sufficient for you to be able to run a program and evaluate it and then determine whether or not it's an ongoing program locked in? Because the other question is this also an operational staff service, which technically doesn't need to come to elected members. If the executive want to move staff from one place to another, they can do that without our say-so, as far as I know.
Right. I think rather than putting Mr. Adams on the spot with that particular question, we should maybe go to Mr. Lyons or Mr. Harrison.
So through the chair, there's two things there, Councillor. The first is being measured against this plan, and we're very happy with that. And I've challenged Mr. Adams about that already. And as the Mayor has said, we have inserted a suite of KPIs against each of the focus areas. And I am happy to commit to an annual report against all of them every single year, coming back at the end of a financial year to report success against them. I'm very confident that under Mr. Adams' leadership that we will achieve them. With regard to the FTEs, I did explain in some communications last week that my challenge to date is that I have got annual funding for additional FTEs through council recommendations for particular projects, and historically they've been Edwardstown oriented. And as such, the staff that I have on doing that work have 12 months certainty. And at the moment, they only have 3 months certainty. We're just 3 months to the end of the year. And my intent behind this was to put some long-term certainty around our program and our staff, who I do want to keep. I would prefer to have that as an ongoing arrangement. I would be happy to have that as a 4-year arrangement. That's the intent behind this plan and would align with the council term as well.
Well, there were two points there. I thought what Councillor Crossland was driving at was that if we haven't had a proper service review in relation to this unit before presenting this report, then should there be a fixed time in which such a review can occur before committing to permanent funding of $750,000 a year or whatever it might be? So what would be, if we were going to do that, what would be the appropriate review period? 2 years or 3 years, or you're suggesting 4 years, Mr. Lyons?
So through the chair, maybe the way to put it is that we haven't tabled the prior success or outcomes. We do have that data. We've got historical data. In fact, a number of these KPIs are based on outcomes of existing service levels and existing KPIs. So that does exist. Perhaps that hasn't been presented on an annual basis, as we are committing to do from here on.
So as to the other point that Councillor Crossland raised about the elected body choosing the Labor complement for ongoing business as usual, my view is that this is absolutely not correct. Now, this last year, what this looked like was an Edwardstown project. And it is true that in the case of projects, when we've had a particular event or program that we've allocated staff cost into it so that we have a total cost, whether it be an event or a program, whatever. It's true that there might have also crept in some other things like hard rubbish collection, but I can see that what we've done there is set a service standard which entails additional labour, and so we've authorised a higher cost for that. Economic development, generally, I would have thought is business as usual. It would be treated as business as usual in any metropolitan council, I suspect. So in my view, it's an operational matter as well. And the Local Government Act is clear that the elected members shouldn't be making operational decisions to that extent. We choose the overall budget. We choose levels of service. I don't have any criticism of the $316,000 that's on page 31 for goods and services ongoing. But to choose the effectively choose the complement for a business unit, I think's beyond our jurisdiction. So I invite management to respond to that. But just one final point. If we can decide the employment budget for each business unit, well, we might be looking at a few others, and they may not be increases, they might be decreases. And I think if you think that through, it's preposterous. So I'd invite a staff response to that, please.
Thank you, through the chair. So on reading this paper, the issue that came to mind for myself was, has it been clear in the past that we've moved from a council endorsed project approach to a business as usual approach, which has just been alluded to? If we've certainly moved to a business as usual approach, well, then I agree with the sentiment expressed by the mayor that I think it is in the domain of the CEO to look at the FT staffing commitment numbers, as long as we're held accountable to provide evidence and results through KPIs that we're delivering the services that we're advocating is within the scope of the resourcing model. So I'm certainly happy to have endorsed upon us the sense of this is business as usual. We'll determine the staffing levels and requirements. But I reiterate the point that I think that we should be held very much accountable through all performance feedback through to council in relation to the provision of services on utilisation of those budgets.
So, Mr. Harrison, just I'm not sure if we're disagreeing or not, but if the motion was as printed, except that it would say instead of budget allocation of 771,000, it was 316,000 for the goods and services. Clearly, by endorsing the plan, we're setting a level of service, and that is elected members' job. Can we then leave it to you to employ sufficient people as necessary to carry out the plan, Mr. Harrison?
The answer is yes. If I can also just take advantage of this opportunity to seek a sense of, is it the case that council is very much sending the clear message to administration that this is an ongoing piece of business and not time limited? Because I do have a sense that previously, or maybe it's evolved from more of a project approach in delivery of services, possibly towards Edwardstown, where I think, as you may have suggested, the councils today see economic development as part of business as usual built into their business model.
Well, others can contribute. I'll come to Councillor Velisca in a moment. But after discussions today, I pulled out a 2015 email, for example, as I was corresponding with Neil McNeish. He was the economic development, I don't know what his name was, manager or whatever at the time. There was no council resolution to employ him. He was employed on staff to do the economic development role, which practically every metropolitan council has, maybe not the tiny ones. So I think the exception was created when we had an Edwardstown project and put hundreds of thousands a year for several years into it, and it's created the illusion that it came out of nothing, but it actually came out of the business as usual of economic development, which is part of our prosperity value in our strategic documents. So interested in others' views on that, Councillor Bălescu?
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, I think it's important that businesses get that information, and I think probably one of the most important things a business can get, especially if they're about to start, is when not to actually start, or not to run their business, not waste everybody's time and their money. I think it's really important that businesses know what they're up for before they begin or at the beginning of that process. I guess the question I have is, are we best placed to be providing that service? What's happened to the business enterprise centres? And it sounds like the business communities that we have may be more about networking, which is important, as opposed to actually assisting a broader range of businesses, as seems the goal. So I'm just wondering, are we best placed? Can we actually hit up the other levels of government for some more funding and something substantial? Because I know I've seen the business enterprise centres going from hubs all over the place to sort of online and a very skeleton service. And especially now that the economy is hurting, it'd actually be a good opportunity for us to lobby other levels of government to actually have something substantial in place that can actually provide a broader service for more people, which we can complement.
Okay, just take that as a comment at the moment, or was that a question, Councillor? Sorry.
Question as to why are we better at doing this than perhaps other levels of government or a centralised agency?
And I guess it comes through to the fact that Councillor Telfer wanted us to go through each topic one by one just to talk about why we're doing it. But in general terms, Mr. Adams?
A lot of those services don't exist anymore. Has been part of it. The BECs existed for a while. They got funded by the councils that wanted to continue them operating for a while. And then as that has slowly faded over time, so have the number of BECs. We have the pleasure of being the closest level of government to people, which is when you talk to who are the people who are going to start up, we can get to them. Dealing with the state government, dealing with the feds is can be challenging. And this is one of the areas where local government staff do some of their best work, is that we can provide local context. We're not going to be the best funding partner for some of this stuff. There's going to be federal grants, there's going to be state grants, there's going to be lots of money available to people who do certain things. Accessing that as a new person can be really challenging as well. So again, this is one of the areas that I think that my team can add value, help people with that starting point using the mentoring program, get those mentoring sessions in. Is this the right time? These are great questions. These are things that our team and the services that we offer are able to deliver on.
Coming back to that sequence, focus two, I will invite further questions and comment, but sustainable industrial engagement. Can you talk to us, Mr. Adams, about why we're involved here?
Again, this is probably coming back to my last comment around grant funding that exists. There is, at the moment, a huge amount of money available for businesses that want to green their business. It's, for a small business, an incredibly intimidating service to try and to work through. But it is something that I think my team can help them with. This could be whether it's the reps rebates to change your LED light, halogen lights to LED lights, whether it's to upgrading your manufacturing system. There's people that will fund that. One, people don't know that those things exist, and they're huge swaths of money for businesses who would like to reach out and use them. We would like to make sure that that money lands in City of Marion and businesses here are able to become more efficient, to be greener in the process of doing that. And that we, again, for the cost of us helping, we hope that we'll actually be seeing more money come into Marion as a result of what City of Marion's actually investing in my team. There's a lot out there at the moment for this kind of work, but people just can't find it or make their way through the grant writing process and whatnot.
Thank you. And very positive that in this section, not just the environmental one, you've actually got the challenging KPI of an event which directly leads to new jobs being filled. So thank you for including that. Now, any questions or comments on the first or second focus, Councillor Luscombe?
Thank you, Mayor Hannah. Yeah, I just had a question which is a little bit related to the evaluation data. And I mean, I'm looking at the KPIs at the moment, and it's kind of based on qualitative data, potentially, you know, did you attend? Did you find it beneficial? Which is useful. And I'd guess I would just really like to see some more quantitative economic output outcome data. Sure. Around, you know, the number of small businesses that are open at any given time in the area versus closing and things like that. And I don't know how we would tease that out in terms of, you know, whether they'd access the service or not, but just, is it actually making an impact when we look at the economic data? That would be my question.
Certainly easy enough to count the businesses operating and not operating, that is public. Mr. Adams?
Yeah, through the chair. I would not want to take the credit for a rising economic tide, which is one of the reasons, or in this case, if the economy goes bad. Businesses open and close every year, and we can definitely report on the number. I would feel I could be, it'd be one of those things where if we were to measure our impact on that, and I think the qualitative stuff is where we were going to be able to show maybe what we can do a bit more than just giving a flat number, 100 businesses entered, 150 businesses exited or whatever. Happy to provide that information and we can get that information. It's just in terms of the work that we do, is that the best measure for us? That's one of the things where I just, you know, if the economy is going great, Daniel, you're doing a fantastic job, I would feel that may not be the best way to show how well my team's done.
Councillor Luscombe.
Yeah, I agree. I think you'd need to find some good data analysis people that could actually, you know, of the people, you know, I won't talk about data analysis, I have done a lot of it, but you, of the people that did access the service, were they more likely to stay open as a business versus those that didn't access the service? You know, there are ways that you can tease out the data.
And this is, sorry, through the chair, this is one of the areas that I was coming back to that I agree that this is something that's missing, and I think that we need to be better at following up with the businesses that we've engaged with to measure those and to come back to it, whether we, you know, ABS data exists, but does that prove that there's been an outcome as a result of our work? It may come through as qualitative in the way that it's presented, but I think that's where, in the case of the business that's now looking at tourism, if that we can say they've gone through this program, they've got a grant that was worth XYZ dollars, they've now employed two extra people, and as a result, they're open on Saturdays and they're seeing trade of blah, 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 as much as they're willing to give me, because this is their information and not mine. This is the type of stuff that I think, yeah, it would be great to be able to share.
And if I could add to that some relevant history, that this council and others supported the creation of a Southern Adelaide Economic Development Board a few years ago, and we let it go for, I think, about 2 years. And they come out with beautiful glossy reports and everything, all the wonderful achievements in the area. But when you looked at them, there was nothing where you could join the dots between their board meetings and their talking behind the scenes and everything else and the actual outcomes. There were things were happening, but it was hard to say that it was because of that board. And so we took probably a courageous decision and scrapped it. And I dare say we haven't been worse off. But that got, I just relate that history because it goes to the point about getting appropriate KPIs. And I do appreciate the effort that's been made in this report. Any other questions or comments, especially about the first couple of areas? Councillor Crossland?
A question for Mr. Harrison then, if I may. So if we were tonight just note this report, would that mean then the ball was in your court as CEO as to whether you funded it or not? And would you also include some form of an ongoing review so that yourself and council could see the benefit of this type of program, for want of a better word, because it's not a project anymore? And secondly, as we do with other things, if this is a direct benefit to businesses, then obviously that can be something we can look at costing back to the businesses, because we've got the mechanism in the rates to cover any costs for the economic development team.
Mr. Harrison.
Thank you, through the chair. I think the report, if noted, and the conversation tonight has provided some very clear parameters of support from council in relation to nature of the work that we should be doing to support businesses in the City of Marion. So, yes, in my domain, it would be continuation with greater levels of accountability and reporting back to council. And I think what's been suggested tonight is reasonable on a 12-month basis over the four-year cycle that's been proposed. And accordingly, in my position, I will then look at a more permanent ongoing labour model to support the delivery of those services.
Councillor Naismith.
If I could just follow up on that, I agree that was partly my question as well, that if we change from this model, I was going to suggest a three-year review that it came to council, this council, before potentially this council changed again, maybe significantly, maybe not, but yes, definitely like more regular reporting.
I think you might be able to incorporate that into the motion. We can give that some thought. Mr. Harrison?
Through the chair, I do like and I do support generally four-year cycles because I think it can fit in quite neatly with elected member cycles. That being the case, I would always advocate a mid-term review process, so I'd be advocating 2 years, but that's not taking away the proposition of reporting through to council on an annual basis in relation to the metrics that have been looked at and seem to be agreed upon with some others to be considered. So a mid-term review, 2 years, but an annual reporting back to council.
Mr. Adams, would you like to explain to us why we would go ahead with focus three?
Through the chair, absolutely. I think this is a huge opportunity for City of Marion. There's been a fantastic amount of investment around Glenthorne as a starting precinct that we're going to see a lot of visitation come into the area. And at the moment, the visitors to our wonderful city at the end of that process will be able to go to the Vic and maybe the service station nearby, that perhaps we can look to see what we can do to make that a more complete experience for both residents and visitors alike. I think there'll be great opportunities for us to do some interesting work around that area. And I think that that's something that I think my team can add some value to as well. We could create some small businesses, but keeping in mind it's a challenging area, they'll have to be appropriate for what that area is, which is Hillface Zone, and there's lots of challenges around it being a national park and things like that. So we'd have to look for something sensitive, but I think this is something that we could try and map out. Additionally, I think supporting event holders to set up events in the city is really a great way to add vibrancy to the city, things for the residents to do, but also to help invite people into the city as well. That this is a thing that we've seen work really successfully in other councils. An example of this is, so Gluttony is on at the moment as part of the Fringe. They have run a winter event in City of Charles Sturt, that they have run around Queen Street, similar sorts of events where I think by working with the private sector, we may be able to bring some of these types of events into the city. I'm certainly not going to be an event organizer myself and putting these on when there's fantastic experts out there in that field. And this would be the same for Fringe and Sala and similar events to that, to look to see if we can support the private sector to add more vibrancy to the city, create more jobs and more things for locals to do. And then the final one is, on that one is place-based engagement. We've been working with some businesses that would like to upgrade their shop fronts and their public realm. We would like to be able to encourage them to do that, whether that's through some of the street art that we've seen in other areas. I don't think this should be something that council should be doing for businesses, but certainly supporting the ones who are interested. And I think there's lots of things that we can do to create great experiences for locals so they don't have to leave, spend their money elsewhere. They can keep that money locally, keep jobs locally. And these are things that we can help move the ball forward on by partnering with business.
Thanks, Mr. Adams. And Councillor Telford, I've just got one question and two quick points on this. The question is, if in relation to that third aspect, place-based engagement, Mr. Adams, if there's a separate proposal to do some street furniture or art or something like that, that would come back to council, at least to a ward briefing, wouldn't it?
I would expect so. I wouldn't want to use this process as a way that we're going to create assets that then become our responsibility. Unfortunately, sometimes small businesses close, and if it becomes our job to then look after that ongoing, I would not consider that to be a great outcome. But if we can support businesses to do things for themselves, that we could work in that area.
And just two quick points of general information. Glenthorne Farm in particular, the old Glenthorne Farm, which is now part of the National Park, does represent an opportunity in the sense that the Department of Environment has spent a lot of money with us doing the place up, but in a sense they haven't allocated money for two quite large buildings near the entrance, which on current planning is probably not going to hold much more than a brochure holder and a bit of storage for the rangers. So there's actually a great opportunity for cafe or anything, any hospitality type venue you can think of as long as it's sensitive to the surrounding environment. Just something to bear in mind. And the other point I was going to make about industry support is that in our focus group held recently, the Marion 100 group rated very highly festivals, outdoor things, markets, that sort of, I mean, why wouldn't they? But I must say, among a range of council events, they rated quite highly. Sorry, Councillor Telfer, go ahead.
Whereas I understand these facets, I'm a bit amused or perplexed because we have done them, but we have not necessarily done them through the business section as such. We have done it through comms, our event management, through our wellbeing, and other areas. So it's not for me to work out the silos within council, but I'm just a bit cynical about the report because for me it is re-badging what is partially being done now by other departments within council.
Fair point. Who would like to comment on that from management?
I'm happy to answer that. So I suppose what I'm looking to do is to try and find the private sector to make them available, make them aware of the assets that we have, so they can run sustainable businesses ongoing, as opposed to the other fantastic departments that we have in council who have run events for using ratepayer dollars for ratepayers. This would be a trying to look at the events industry as an industry. An industry that would sit within we hit a support business and try and help businesses to run these as ongoing ventures, as opposed to coming back for funding constantly to keep these things going. We have great facilities. We have great opportunities. Do they know about them? That's what I'll be trying to solve.
Other questions or comments? Let's briefly go to focus number 4. Thanks, Mr. Adams.
So this is much, much more BAU in terms of some of the work that my team will do. There's a state government initiative at the moment where regional plans are required. As through my background, we'll provide the economic lens to that because that might be necessary. This would, again, not a hugely funded sort of part within there, just giving visibility for the type of work that will be required. This will then similarly flow into the government engagement around the T to D and making sure that we're giving the businesses that they support that they need as that goes on and trying to create opportunities for business within accessing state government spend and federal government spend in that area.
No KPIs on that one, Mr. Adams?
I would love to be able to tell the state where to spend its money, but unfortunately I can just suggest, so I will do my best to suggest well.
All right, maybe a maximum number of meetings instead of a minimum number of meetings, but... Sorry, let's keep moving. Anything on that from councillors? No. Finally, focus number 5. Thank you.
So this is the service innovation focus in the moving around of the team. There's an existing strategy around the existing smart CON strategy, which has run for a number of years. This is now coming to an end. This is about reviewing what has worked and what hasn't worked, decommissioning things that haven't worked and making a case back for why things should continue if they should. And looking with a lens as to how we are improving services for residents in a way that is really transparent.
Any final questions or comments? Well, then, before we resume formally, Councillor Crossland, would you like some suggestions from the Chair for a motion in light of your comments and Mr. Harrison's comments?
Yes, if that's possible. Yes, please, Your Worship.
Well, if you... I'll just test this with staff as well. But if the words were taken there and the dollar figure was $316,000, and that's taken from page 31, but $316,000, and then A was replaced with a review of the plan's results will be brought to council by April 2025. Just see if staff see any serious comment with that, or any serious problem, I should say. So two financial years. So we could make it to August September 2025. I thought we were talking about a two-year review. That's what I heard from Mr. Harrison. Sorry, Councillor Crossland.
I heard it was a two-year review, but reporting annually, just as an update report, not a full review.
You can either assume that will happen or include it. Then
I'm happy to assume that will happen from Mr. Harrison.
Then, Councillor Crossland, I'll resume standing orders. I'll look to you as you wish to move a motion, Councillor Crossland. I beg your pardon, Councillor Telfer.
I do that. The point that I raised about the word endorses, can't we have something like moves to consider in the budget or something like that, rather than endorse this yes or no tonight before we've actually taken on all the other budgetary considerations?
Well, Councillor Telfer, I think for the sake of moving forward with progress, it's not, may I say that it's not unusual in the first half of the year for various expenditure items to come in bit by bit. It's not the ideal solution, because you'd rather have everything on the table and then pick and choose what you want to fund. But I would say that it has happened often before. But if I would say, let's have a motion put with an endorsement of the plan, which really means the activities and the foci in the plan. If any councillor thinks that it should rather be reviewed as part of the budget deliberations, then they could vote no to the motion, and it could still come back as part of the budget one way or another. The only other factor that I heard from staff here is that we've got staff whose tenure runs out by the middle of the year. So there is that factor as well. That concern is perhaps not of our manufacture, but it's a real factor for them nonetheless. Councillor Telfer, can I leave that thought with you? And you can vote accordingly. But Councillor Crossland, I'll come back to you for a motion.
Thank you, Your Worship. Look, I did consider changing it to notes, but and picked up on Councillor Telfer's point there. However, we do a budget, actually finalise the budget, and during that process, my view is that council members can take out and add in items whether they want to or not at that time. Look, I'm happy that this goes in. It's got some KPIs, it's got a review, and I don't believe we're now treading into operational matters. So I would ask members to support the way that it's written.
Seconded, Councillor Pryor.
Yeah, I'm happy to second this. I think there is a role within council for this sort of work, and I actually commend Mr. Adams, because I think he's done a reasonable job of sorting out some KPIs for the area. I think if members who are on council in the past thought about the economic development KPIs, I don't think you have to think too hard to get through where we were. I would love to see a KPI about how much grant funding we are helping our businesses obtain, and actually not limited to businesses, anyone in our council to obtain, because I think that is certainly of value to our residents and our businesses. And that one's probably, for me, that's probably the top of the pops. You know, how much money are we helping people get from other sources, not just us? I encourage the work. I think it's good.
Perhaps we'll just leave Mr. Adams to take that on board as a comment. Getting the information might be the hard part, but it's not impossible. Now, it's been moved and seconded. Any opposition? Councillor Telfer.
I'll reiterate that, number one, I can endorse the plan, but in number two, I believe the Economic Development Unit budget should be forward for consideration in the budget system.
Any other speakers in favour? Councillor Masika.
Thanks, Your Worship. I would like to say, look, the council has enormous influence to the type of business we can attract into the region. And the, having a plan, business plan, engagement plan, and they also have a budget associated with the economic development budget for the unit, it will attract and it will support many businesses which can decide to relocate up to the city of Marion. So in that sense, in that case, I support up the motion the way it is.
Any other speakers against? Then Councillor Crossland, anything to close with?
Oh, look, the only thing again is just to clarify that endorses the budget allocation means that we will reconsider it again in June when we actually lock it into actual the annual business plan.
I'll put it to the vote. All those in favour? All those against? Carried by a majority. So we keep moving along. I have one more item. It's on page 196. Thanks, Mr. Adams, and thanks, Mr. Lyons. Thanks for all your work preparing all of that. Page 196, potential National Reconciliation Week event. I'll just make a note here on the procedure for recently incoming councillors that sometimes if you do have an idea that you want to move forward, if you just bring in the whole thing box and dice, you may not get the result you want, but sometimes it pays to set the groundwork by triggering a report, which of itself costs nothing except staff time, and then all of the information can be brought back for a further decision. So just to explain that sort of procedure to you, Councillor Crossland.
Thank you, Your Worship. Yeah, look, I've brought this report, a request for a report to council. New members may not know, but we are supporting Living Kaurna Cultural Centre business at LKCC. Business is called Southern Cultural Immersion. Unfortunately, the way that our grants program runs, we can't actually help fund an event at the LKCC that includes SCI as a business partner because they are a commercial business. Unfortunately, in our RAP, we don't have any funding attached to do an event like this. So what I'm asking for is a review of how we fund events or things we want to do as part of our Reconciliation Action Plan. And hopefully that will give us the ability to consider funding an event such as the Reconciliation Week event each year. And whether that's a sliding scale or a fixed amount, that's what I'm asking for. So we're not coming to council every year to do this type of request.
That's seconded. Councillor Masika.
Thanks, Your Worship. I would like to second the motion that has been presented by Councillor Crossland. And there's a big merit for having this report and also for the council if you can support the event which has been proposed in May or June. As a member of Reconciliation Action Plan for the City of Marion, I think, I strongly believe that if the proposal can be accepted, debated and accepted and be supported, it will be further advancement of Reconciliation Action Plan for the council. And not only that, as we can say, look, the city of Marion is multicultural, so we have First Nation people and also people from other parts of the world. And if this event can be supported, it will be advancement of intracultural between the newcomers and also the First Nation people. So I'd like to second and ask the members to support the motion.
Anyone speaking against? Councillor Telfer?
Against, but
or a question?
My question is, has thorough consideration been given about a large public event in May, June? Because I don't believe, given that in November I went and sat on the grass and was absolutely freezing in the Living Kaurna Centre, I don't believe May, June are good seasons, so I'll ask that question.
I'll allow Councillor Crossland to answer that when he replies, or just check if anyone else is speaking against. If not, then Councillor Crossland to close the debate and answer Councillor Telfer.
I might look to staff, but I don't think the City of Marion can change the date of when we have Reconciliation Week. I believe it's fixed.
That would be fixed. I think we can all agree on that.
So, yeah, that's the date we celebrate, we recognise Reconciliation Week, and that's the week that the Kaurna would like to do their event.
Very well. Let us now proceed to a vote. All those in favour, raise your hand. All those against? No, that is carried unanimously. Thank you. One final note before I formally close the meeting. I attended the funeral of Mavis Haynes, whom a few of us here would know, dearly beloved wife of former Mayor Colin Haynes. She was getting into her around 90 years old, and it was a lovely event. She rests in peace. I declare the meeting closed.